I'm so excited to welcome everybody to this extra special episode of Taking in the Scene. We are in well into season three, but we've got, instead of doing this as a numbered episode, we're doing all of our interviews as specialty episodes.
Bonus edition.
And I'm especially excited today because we have on a repeat guest. Today on the podcast, we're going to be talking about religious trauma with the incomparable, amazing, incredible, and truly beautiful, sensational.
Also, who are we?
Who are we?
Well, yeah. It's so funny.
I was like, all right.
I'm always the one saying right to Orange, it. Like, who are we? I'm Mango Sorbet. And I'm joined, as always,
by... Look, you
were lowering the voice.
I'll say bye.
Should we introduce
Orange?
Each other?
We'll
do that one day.
Who's the person I'm pointing to?
Oh, wow. Is that a finger pointing at me?
It is.
I am Denzel Darko.
I love it. And...
Warm Orange.
Woohoo! So we are the crew of Taking in the Scene. We are joined by Sensational. Before I read Sensational's bio, I want to warn our listeners today. We have sort of a litany of content warnings. Instead of going through each one that could come up, I'm going to state that we are going to be discussing religious trauma. And we're going to be discussing religious trauma as it relates to kink. If this is not the episode for you for any reason, that's fine. That's great. You should absolutely skip. We have tons of other episodes that
absolutely.
Are going to be potentially less triggering. And we're aware that we're going to get into some heavy subjects today throughout the episode. If something particularly heavy comes up, we may acknowledge again that there's a trigger warning coming up. But I just wanted to start the episode with that warning.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, we are joined today, as I've said, by Sensational. Sensational is a sadomasochist, little and submissive, as well as being queer, femme, and disabled. She's been in the kink scene for 9 years. I think probably 10 now. 10
yeah,
years.
Yeah, yeah, 10, yeah.
Let's say 10 years. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Happy deck-iversary.
Yes. Deck-iversary.
Yeah.
And knows well what she's into, but is an expert in absolutely nothing. I think I said last time we did this an interview with you how much I love that you said an expert in absolutely nothing.
That's great.
It is so. It's great because you're an expert in yourself,
right?
But
exactly.
I think sometimes people will say like you have a podcast about kink, so you're an expert. I'm like, oh no, I just have access to a microphone.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, welcome, Sensational. Thank you for being here with us.
Yeah.
Why don't you start by introducing yourself, giving us a little bit of background, and telling us a little bit about why you're on the podcast today to talk about religious trauma and kink. I know it's a big question. Feel free to address as much or as little of that as you want.
Yeah. So I guess this episode is... relates to me and the fact that I have experienced religious trauma. I grew up in a very religious household that was also a little bit outside of even the what you would think of like traditional Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
It took me, you know, a long time to get out of that. And then, once I started like deconstructing is when I got into kink. I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna do all the things. And so it, you know, that sort of like deconstructing and that finding that like freedom away from the shame and oppressive nature of my religion is sort of what led me to kink in the first place. And
for context, yeah. what religion?
So
right to the point. Orange.
Yeah.
No, good.
No, I grew up a Protestant Christian, but my mom took on some more conservative ideas with that. And so I was part of this unschooling, which unschooling is sort of homeschooling, but without any structured formatting or education. It's just sort of you learn what you want to learn on your own terms. And so I grew up largely in that group, sort of like a subculture of very conservative people, very deep into like purity culture, and yeah, just some extreme Christian views.
Go for it.
I'm going to make a disclaimer for our listeners that although we are talking about religious trauma in the broad sense, we're going to be specifically focusing on Christianity because I believe that is where most of us have a grounding and an understanding in here. We don't want to speak on other religions that we don't have a lot of emphasis or understanding in. So if you're looking for that, it's probably out there somewhere, but you're just not going to find it with us today.
Yeah, I mean, like any religion can give you trauma, we are going to focus, as Denzel said, on Christianity primarily. And if it's not too sensitive a question, without any details that would make you uncomfortable, can you talk about your personal experience with religious trauma?
Yes. Yes, that's what I'm here to do, I guess, to start off with. But for me, just growing up, like, I feel like the biggest trauma for me was growing up queer in that space and knowing that, like, having those feelings, but having to like repress that because of all the like shame surrounding it within those communities. And it's very hard to be a child and grow up like being told that you're gonna burn in hell for eternity for the way that you are. So that's a lot of trauma.
Yeah, no kidding.
That was tough. I also experienced a lot of misogyny. Purity culture is just, it's very misogynistic.
What did that look like?
My worth being tied to my virginity.
My purity.
Very patriarchal.
Personally, while I think like my brothers had that pressure too, I don't think it was nearly as intense as what was put on girls.
Yeah. I mean, the experience is just going to be different.
Yeah.
I was going to add like a piece. So Denzel and Mango staring at me. Like, Orange, don't you dare. No.
Orange, I'm like, what are you
where
doing?
Are you going?
It's related. So I was listening to some stuff before we came into here. And one of the things that the person mentioned, this is a person who's from a religious perspective, but more of a, you know, progressive Christian versus, you know, fire and brimstone situation. And one thing he said is like, you know, just kind of marriage as an establishment, the woman is seen as property. Basically, the father gives away the woman to the groom, and you know, they make a procession from the father's house to the man's house, and the woman just becomes a homemaker once she goes there. So it goes into that thing of like your property, which is where the purity aspect comes in, because like you got to be pure because I want my property to be unused and brand new. And it's like,
it's
gross.
Yeah, I could see that also. Like, I grew up Southern Baptist, and like when I think back to, you know, everybody can interpret the Bible differently, right? Yeah. Just like anybody can interpret anything differently. And some people will take like a verse or a phrase and extrapolate that. And then that's all of a sudden the religious grounding for the actions and behaviors that people are doing. It's like, oh yeah, well, it said it in this verse right here. So of course you got to like spare not the rod for the child. And it's like, okay, well, what does that mean? And that's very broad and open. And then some people are like, that gives me the reason to, you know, do what I need to do to keep you in line. So I could definitely see, you know, relate to where you're coming from with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As a disclaimer, I grew up Jewish and remain Jewish. But I am a person who lives in America where Christianity is like the name of the game. Shoved down your throat. Oh my yeah, God. It's absolutely shoved down everyone's throat. And also, to some extent, like I have to behave according to Christian norms, standards, yeah. norms. So while I didn't grow up that way, there's so much that I'm hearing and being like, oh yeah, that's purity culture is it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all around us. And it's so creepy in some ways.
Yeah.
Very creepy.
But yeah. Tell us more.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like the deeper you go into purity culture and then you get like just it affecting every aspect of your life and whether or not you're allowed to have friends that are boys, whether or not you're allowed to wear, like a lot of my friends weren't allowed to wear pants. And things like that. But for me, a big part of the misogyny that I experienced that was driven by religion from my own parents was that being denied education. And being unschooled, whereas my brothers went to public school.
Wow,
but
really?
Me and my sister, wow. yeah, me and my sister did not go to public school because my mom wanted to sort of preserve our purity and preserve our relationship with Christ. And
I have so many thoughts bubbling.
I have so many questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think Mango probably has the exact. So I was going to defer to Mango.
I'm curious what your questions are, Orange. Go for it.
Well, my question was like, is that kind of so? Okay, there's a concept of echo chambers, and it's a concept of epistemic bubbles. Epistemic bubble is a situation where you're not aware of a thing, but once you're aware of it, you know you change your behavior. In yes. a echo chamber is essentially you're actively trying to shoot down counter thoughts. So what it sounds like is, I don't want to speak for your experience, but I was gonna say you might have been in one of the two where your mom's like, I don't want you to go to school because it's going to pop that epistemic bubble that I'm trying to create you for. But also, because she's keeping you at home, it's also an echo chamber. So it's like...
Why not both?
Yeah.
Right, why not both?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she definitely... And she would even say, like, oh, public school kids are evil. Like, atheists are evil. And
then sent your siblings there as well.
I know.
Right? Yeah.
You know, but boys are stronger.
They're supposed to be out in the world.
Yeah, boys can resist those things better than girls. I don't know what the thought process was, but I also know that part of
they can resist.
Yeah, part of that difference too, though, was very much that my mother wanted me and my sister to grow up and just be. Housewives. Right. So we didn't need an education.
Yeah.
We needed to know how to do things around the house. Mm-hmm. We needed to know how to be good wives and good mothers. And that was really all I was taught to aspire to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sad hearing this.
Yeah, no, it was not great. You know, I mean, it's okay. I broke away.
Yeah.
Don't be too sad. I'm good now. But
like a lot of people don't.
That's true.
Or they do, but they can't break
and
away.
And I,
part
of my experience has been that I, even though a lot of times the people who don't break away grow up to be really problematic people who are oppressing others and being awful and oppressing other women. I also just feel so much like empathy for them because I understand
when
you grow up like that and you just aren't given the opportunity to see anything differently. And so, especially, from a feminist point of view, like those women, even though I don't want to be friends with them, I don't agree with their viewpoints on things.
Mm-hmm.
They're being oppressed.
Right.
And, they're brainwashed and they're being abused by their own partners, their own religion, and it sucks.
Well, that's exactly true. What was it? Brainwashing.
Oh my gosh. The Lord. Not Mormons. Shoot.
What are you trying to?
No, there's the one like if so once you decide to leave Jehovah's Witness, once you decide to leave, they literally cut off your entire family structure. They cut off everything. Mm-hmm. They want to make you feel miserable, and it's kind of that control aspect of keeping you in. Mm-hmm. And I was gonna say going to what Sensational was mentioning, like that control aspect.
Yes, agreed.
Seems to be central. Now Jehovah's Witness is a whole different conversation. I'm not even gonna attempt to pretend that I don't think about that. But just on. Sensational, what you're telling us, like it was about control.
Yeah, controlling mm-hmm. of information, controlling yep. of who you interact with, mm-hmm. all those measures of control, especially like mm-hmm. as I'm hearing you're saying, like we're establishing your childhood, like your mm-hmm. origins and your growing up was surrounding that. So yeah, like that collective brainwash feeling, of course, mm-hmm. that as they get older, if they've never had a chance to experience the other, had the chance to break away like you, mm-hmm. then it. Not only does it allow it to exist, but it like perpetuates it. And then, you know, I'm thinking about like the next generation, like right, yeah. do they continue these mm-hmm. modes and they pass it on to that? So it's like, it never really, it's not one of those things that goes away. It might yeah, I mean, just that, be disappeared from public mind, but it still cycles of exists. Yeah.
What
for
Denzel
people.
Just said, like really brought, I think clarified my question, which was you had said like they're being oppressed. These people are being oppressed, but mm-hmm. First I had a question before, which was around mm-hmm. when you like burst the bubble, at what age and what proceeded from that. But before we get to that, there's this question of like, well, one, I think the people who are being oppressed actually don't think they're being oppressed.
Oh, absolutely.
No, yeah.
But then they in, as Denzel was saying, as they perpetuate that behavior, they, not only oppress the people in their family circles, but also like they vote.
Yes.
Yeah. And they do things yeah. like yes. decide yeah. laws.
They're still civilians and
right.
citizens.
They're still people. And like yeah. it, mm-hmm. What I'm struggling with as you're saying they're being oppressed is I agree with you that they're being oppressed, but also they don't think they're being oppressed and they're at the same time oppressing others.
Yes.
And my brain is just boiling.
I know. Ignorance. I don't, it's such a hard, and it's ignorance. You know, it's such a hard, that's why I think I get to have that unique point of view because yes. that could have been me. That was me
yeah. mm-hmm.
until I was like 23. That was me.
Whoa.
And so, mm-hmm. I know what that feels like. And I understand like that feeling of like, no, the things that I'm doing is serving God. This is how I serve God. And
kinky.
So to break, yeah, but yeah, to break like, away from it is to break yeah. away from God. It's that's like what yeah, you feel.
That's Saul and, to, wow, that's Saul to Paul, yeah. but Paul to Saul. Like Paul instead Saul, of going yeah. one way and like, oh, wow, I'm cleansed of everything. It's like, nah, I want the heathen
yeah.
shit.
Like, yeah.
Bring it on.
Yeah. Well, yeah. wait, so you said 23. Was yeah. that like a breaking point or had you been like breaking before then in 23?
I think it's just I was when you... starting to. Mm-hmm. So I was in a very unhealthy, I would say abusive relationship, mm-hmm. Long term, and my religion dictated that I deal with it.
Right.
And
what does deal with it mean?
Stick it out.
Just yeah, suffer? You have to just stick it okay. out. And you know, we went to therapy, and it was religion based therapy, and oh my therapist was very much. Well, you know, this wouldn't be happening if you were a better wife.
Wow.
To clarify, situation? Was your therapist certified in any way? Or
yeah.
Whoa.
Oh, I absolutely. Yeah. We are in America. Are you from the South by chance?
I'm not from the South, but this therapist was in the South.
Okay. Yeah.
I grew
okay.
up in Michigan, but.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
My but, brain just broke.
Yeah, it sounds very Southern to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it was very, it was not great. And so
yep.
sort of like after years of trying to just, you know, my partner was cheating on me. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you have to just, you know, get through that. Like if you are more affectionate, if you're more loving, he'll stop cheating on you.
Right.
Which did not occur.
I mean.
Right. And so it was like.
It's years it's providing of, cover.
I'm just yeah. imagining right now that you, in order to try and make this relationship work, well, one, it's classic victim blaming,
yeah.
but two, you went out of your way to be more affectionate to someone who was hurting you and they kept hurting you. And like at a certain point, this is just me imagining, like, that must have just hurt your heart and destroyed your faith.
Yes, I'm guessing that's because, what happened. Because it was like, why, you know, I thought that I was doing this for God, right?
Right.
Because
right.
Because I made this promise to God that I was going to love this person and I was going to submit to him, you know, and I was going to be this good partner. And so to turn my back on that felt like breaking a promise to God. But then it was like, why does my God want me to suffer this much? Like, why does my God want me to be so unhappy? And
story of Christianity.
I feel like if anyone's listening. I doubt they'd come to this podcast if they were not already interested in kink, but I hope that if anyone's listening and they like hear you say, why would God want me to suffer? I hope that like is an awakening for them.
I mean, oh, sorry, go ahead.
That's not really what I was taught. That God is love, and it didn't feel anything like love. It didn't feel anything like I was being taken care of, and
you're being gaslit.
By God my lit. Own beliefs,
and I'm stressed out thinking about a man who wouldn't return, like who you're showing affection to, and who wasn't responsible at all for any of his actions.
Oh, he probably felt like he was being rewarded.
Yeah,
right.
No, correct.
I'm doing my dirt, and then I come home to you doing all the things.
Yeah.
You can just do what you want. Like, it's like, wow, I get all the
it's
things.
Par for the course.
But, you know, I will say we were young, and that's another part of religion is it pressures you to just find your person young because purity culture and all of that.
18.
And, you know, and so I don't think either of us were happy. He seems to be a better person now that he's in a happy situation, but to me he wasn't. And it was rough, but I think that really broke me. And then I left that relationship, and in doing so left my faith. I just felt I couldn't follow any of this anymore.
I'm sorry,
go for it, Orange.
Well, I was going to say, I didn't know if we were, because like we can literally spend like forever talking about just this.
I know.
because it's so much to dissect.
I do want to get to the kink part.
Yes.
Oh, I was about to switch gears.
No, but this.
I felt it in the air. I was going to let you finish.
No.
Okay.
I mean, I think that this story definitely plays into my kink and how sort of evolved from that.
Well, that is a question. Why don't you talk like, if you're willing, can you speak on that?
Yeah. I think just after so many years of like feeling like I couldn't explore my sexuality, I decided to explore my sexuality. And, you know, started out in a pretty vanilla way doing that, and then found my way to FetLife and was like, wow, this looks like the polar opposite of what I've been doing. And
a really great time.
Yeah.
It's like, ew, that's gross. Okay, let's do it.
But they're smiling.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to stick around.
I was like, all this stuff is sin, right? It's sinful. That's what I was taught. And so, that's
like,
where,
more than just missionary?
My name came from, too. I was like, sensational. I was like, I'm giving in to the sin. I want to do it.
Superhero origin story.
I love that.
That's where the name comes from.
It's so good.
Yeah. And it's been, I mean, it's been great exploring those things without that shame. At first I did feel it. At first I still felt all the shame. I would cry after every scene and be like, I am betraying my faith. My power has grown.
Denzel, I know you had a question related to that.
Oh, I think you asked the question I was gonna ask about, like, you know, you were saying you'd broken away and then you were transitioning into kink, like, And I think you might have explained what kind of gravitated you. It was like a curiosity and a desire to, like, you know, explore a larger portion of the world and yourself as well. Right. And I guess, let's see, where can we go? Through that journey, if you don't mind sharing, what have been some highs from, you know, stepping into the kink space? Like, what do you feel like you've been able to overcome some things, whether it's related to like the religious trauma or things that were maybe indirectly connected to it?
Yeah, so a really big thing for me was I entered the kink scene being like, I am not a submissive. You know, because that's what I've been taught my whole life, is you have to be submissive.
Okay. Right.
And then exploring kink and realizing, like, I still wanted to do those things, but then it was my choice. Yes. There was no one telling me I had to do that.
Agency.
And so I got to live out those things that I still wanted to. I wanted to, but I didn't want to feel this pressure that I had to.
Right.
And then it was difference. On my terms, and it was like, if I don't like this shit, I can stop it.
Yes.
And which is a power you don't have when you feel like you have to do it your soul.
Denzel using the word agency, I think, was just hitting the nail on the head.
Yeah. So that's that was a really big thing for me to, you know, it took years for me to sort of come to terms with, you know, I am a submissive, but, you know, consent is important. And in this context of BDSM, I get to consent to these things.
Oh, I love that.
Rather than just having it taken from me, like having that choice taken from
me. It's almost like the difference in, like, doing it to serve God and doing it to serve, like, yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, feed into your power.
Another way that kink has been really helpful in my healing is because when I left my faith, I left all of the traditions and all of the rituals.
I was thinking all about that,
and
too.
It left this hole in me, and I felt like,
It did. Sorry,
gosh, I don't.
That wasn't her.
You know,
whoa.
I take a.
Whoa!
I'm so sorry.
We need a buzzer or something for that.
We'll edit that out. That's fine.
Keep it.
Yes. But when I took away, I had nothing to worship. I had all this energy.
Procession and all that.
Yeah, and I didn't have any place to put it. I didn't have any of these comforting, like, rituals and stuff that I did within Christianity. And I found a lot of comfort through, like, the ritualistic nature of kink and DS dynamics. And, and that was very healing for me to be able to experience those things in a not traumatic environment.
And
in
I
way.
Got one more point or question. How about this in relation to community as well? Because I'm imagining when you grew up, that environment was like all one single minded and everything else. And then to come on to Fet Life and then, you know, to get into the local scenes as well. Like, how did community change for you?
It has been so wonderful. I was able to, after a year or so in kink, like, I felt comfortable, like, with my sexual orientation and being able to come out, and I had my first girlfriend. You know, it was very, like, I got, you know, this, I gained this, like, queer family that I didn't have access to through the kink community. You could certainly do that not through the kink community, but for me it was through kink. And even just being exposed to people who had different religious beliefs, different ethnicities, because I only grew up with white people.
Oh, wow.
So it has for sure, like, made me a better person. Just to get to learn, like, know other people outside of what I was taught, like, you know, the, like, public school kids are evil, like, atheists are evil. Like, it was just, it was not great. And so I was able to sort of deconstruct all those beliefs too, and, like, get to know real people and realize, like, that the stuff I taught was very wrong.
It sounds like through the isolation of religion growing up, you didn't get to explore humanity and kink. It's allowed you to, like, actually be in touch with human beings.
And just being accepted, like, for who I am. I don't have a relationship with any of my family anymore other than my mom, but it's very... So it's not a great relationship. So, you know, being able to find people who accept me for who I actually am when, you know, no one I grew up with does. And so that's been really good for me.
Well, and on the sense of community and building that back up, has it guided you into a situation to where you feel like if you do have to hang out with your family, you have much more tenacity to like deal with their bullshit?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Which is yes. Absolutely.
End of question.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yes, for sure. Okay. Yeah.
Something you said earlier really brought up this question for me around like the difference between your access to consent in your under your faith and your access to consent under kink. Mm-hmm. And I think while it's important to note that not everyone arrives at kink through an experience of trauma, a lot of people do find kink to be a really healing space. And I'm wondering if you can talk about, like, you know, risk-aware practices and kink, or risk-aware practices and consent under kink, and how that differed from your experience in your faith.
Yeah.
Or how it was healing, if that is the case for you.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you grow up in sort of those very, like, oppressive environments, mm-hmm. Where everything is, you must do this, mm-hmm. Then, I mean, I didn't feel like I had very many choices at all mm-hmm. in my life, mm-hmm. And certainly not with my sex life or sexuality. You know, you have to make your partner happy, and you know you're supposed to wait until marriage, and all of this stuff. And in kink, especially, like, you know, we are bigger on consent, even I think, than the vanilla society.
I would agree,
absolutely.
We all agree with you.
So that emphasis on choice and being able to explore things on my terms, yep. and say no when I wanted to say no without feeling like I was letting anybody down, mm-hmm. Was very healing and empowering for sure. And like I said, you know, that, like, being able to explore submission and stuff without it being,
I love that,
without the pressure of it being something I had to do, whether I wanted to or not, mm-hmm. being something that I could do because it wanted to. Like, it is a very different feeling. One is happy and one is not, right. You know?
Right.
So, yeah. And I think that I can see that being healing for a lot of people in that situation if you don't have choices to suddenly, like, be able to make your own choices about your body and you know, how you express yourself sexually, how you express yourself through love. You know, I'm not polyamorous anymore, but I mm-hmm. I was, and you know, that's obviously not something that's gonna go over super well in very conservative circles like that.
If you interpret the Bible somewhere, polygamy, but yes, that's
but not, yes. But not for you,
not in my subculture of Christianity. Yeah,
according to the Bible, you're just there.
Yeah,
I know. It would be polygamy. What would be? Oh, what's the word? Polygamy is like for men,
a man to have.
What's the woman?
Is it polyandry?
I think that sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
it's
that.
I mean, I think, you know, kink can be very healing for a lot of things. Exploring sort of some of those, like, religious kinks and stuff too can, you know, sort of reclaiming some of that. This used to be something that I did that has bad feelings associated with it, and now I can do it and associate good feelings with it and sort of reprogram your brain a little bit that way.
That must have been, like, hard to do though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't recommend you just like jump into reliving. Yeah, jump.
First scene, beat me with the Bible,
I,
daddy.
So I will say, I have been in therapy since I was a teenager, and I work very closely with my therapist when it comes to like my trauma and how I can find healthy ways of coping with my trauma, and you know, sort of get approval of like, hey, what if I tried this, like a little, like playing with it a little to desensitize. And for some people, that's going to be good. It depends on where you're at with your healing journey. Some people, it's just going to be triggering and awful. So you have to be very, you have to learn to become very aware of yourself and protect yourself, you know, and not re-traumatize yourself through those things. But I think that it can be good if you're in a good enough place to handle that.
Well, question on the re-traumatizing yourself is, I mean, there's this psychological concept, psychology concept of exposing yourself to the thing that you fear to kind of, or that you might have a particular trauma on, so you can like learn how to work around and work with it. Not saying that people should do this in kink without licensed professionals, like specifically with therapy. You should do it with your therapist if your therapist recommends. But did you find yourself doing kind of cycles of that with some of your play and some of the things that you kind of have practiced?
You're asking about exposure.
Yes.
Step by step.
Yeah, no, I have for sure. A lot of, you know, like slut shaming, humiliation type play.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That was very triggering at first, and I was like, I don't want to do any of that. But yeah, little bits over time has definitely sort of desensitized me to that, and that the shame that I felt, you know, I've kind of gotten rid of that shame of like sex is this dirty awful thing that, you know, and I think definitely playing with it through kink, you know, gradually and with help from a therapist, but has definitely been helpful for me. Yeah,
I love to hear that.
And then I had the I guess follow up question. Unless Mango, did you have one?
No, I was gonna pass it over to Denzel.
Oh wait.
Like we're going around the merry-go-round.
All right, well, let's see. I'm gonna switch gears here. Yeah, I think a question I would want to talk about, because you're talking about, you know, different support systems that you had, especially, you know, with the therapy being like a really large umbrella to assist in this journey. So for listeners who might not have directly experienced religious trauma, but are connected or related to somebody who does have it, what are there ways, tips, things that they could do, like educational materials? I know it may not be like, hey, you got to go read this book, but like, what could somebody who wants to support somebody who's navigating religious trauma go through, and how can it also relate maybe in a kink setting?
Yeah, I think that just like really being open-minded and trying to understand where the other person has come from. I know that, you know, something that early on I would feel a lot of anger and not positive things about religion at all. And, you know, and I certainly like down talked people who were religious and things like that. Like, and understanding like where that anger comes from. Because, you know, my partner at the time was Christian. And so it was like, it was a difficult subject for us to talk about sometimes, because I was like, oh, Christianity, fucking stupid. You know, and I was like, this is fucking dumb. And that's, I can understand how that would be hurtful or offensive to someone who is Christian, but also understanding like why someone's feeling that way was very helpful for me. I've got past that, and I will say I'm not like anti people believing in God by any means. I like spirituality is great, and I support people having their beliefs. But when you first get out of something like that, there's a lot of anger. Mm-hmm. And being able to understand the different emotions, you know, and listening and just helping someone work through that.
Right.
Therapy is great. I think that people should go to therapy if you've been through religious trauma, but also if you're trying to help someone through religious trauma, you should also go to therapy. Mm. Trying to help someone through any type of trauma is hard, and you need support too. And honestly, I mean, I think that therapists can help you with, you know, sort of better advice on how to support your partner too. Yeah, in a kink sense, I mean, certain things being triggering, having those discussions of like, what are your limits around this subject area? And, you know, sometimes it's going to be things that you don't even expect. Maybe you're thinking, oh, okay, we need to avoid anything about religion. But no, you need to avoid anything about like slut shaming too, or you need to avoid anything about like, you know, just certain, anything that could come up that is related to that, that maybe you don't know. So having those conversations is so important, you know, with anything, but certainly if someone has experienced trauma and is trying to, get into kink and things.
Just to build on top of that, like, 'cause you mentioned slut shaming, I didn't really think about that as far as religious trauma. I mean, it makes sense. Like you said, and it's like a purity culture, right? Are there any other misconceptions that people might have about religious trauma? Like they might just put it in a box and pack it away, but they don't like consider this is also
what's it all is connected to it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I think that the biggest thing that have faced is just people thinking that, you know, especially people who are religious, thinking that I just hate God and I just hate religion. And then the kink stuff that I do that involve religions is just me being blasphemous and making fun of them. And it's not.
Yeah.
And I've had those conversations before of like, I'm not trying to mock your belief in any way. I'm not trying. I'm just trying to live
it's hard my that life and, to have that you know,
my truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do things that feel good for me, just like any other kink. But I do think that it, you know, anything having to do with religion and kink can be sort of taboo to some people. And yeah, I mean, I've had people get offended for sure. You know, but you have to. I don't know. It's not related to me making fun of people or just hating them. It's just me dealing with my own trauma. And I feel like that's probably true for most people that get into stuff like that. If they're dealing with their own stuff and they're they're living their own experience and, you know, finding their own power and that's the misconception I don't like.
That makes sense, because it's not like you're not out there to perform or promote.
Right.
It's really like a self, like you're saying. And
yeah,
that's also more a side eye to the community and the members as well, who are automatically assuming that, oh, just because we see scenes all the time in front of us, and very rarely is somebody going to be like, that scene shouldn't be happening there. But for you to experience that, like, that's not cool. Because, I mean, we all come to kink for self-expression and then to, you know. And I know everybody's got their boundaries and limits on things, but like, if you don't like it, just step away.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Don't speak up about it.
I did want to build on one of Denzel's questions, which was, what have your partners, past and present, done to make you feel supported in kink as someone who's experienced religious trauma? Like literally, what have they done to make it feel good?
And I'd say, like, maybe also from, like, general things to like specific things, like if you're prepping for a scene or something like that. So like as many examples as you could
go big, go small.
Yeah. Whatever you feel like talking about.
No, I've had partners that were you know, just very willing to act out some of the things that I wanted to do in scenes that you know, that maybe weren't like their kinks. Right. But they see the benefit for me and why I would like to explore that, and have been willing to, you know, explore those things with me.
So not being afraid to get into it.
Yeah. I know my current partner has been very, you know, I've talked a lot about how my queerness was so like repressed growing up and how I've struggled with that. And, you know, although we have agreed to be primarily monogamous and I'm happy with that choice, he's also giving me like rein to be able to still like live my queerness and explore that because I didn't get the opportunity to as much. And just being really supportive of like that healing process and knowing that it's like, you know, about me and being able to like walk with me through that has just been the primary thing that's just, yeah, just allowing me to explore and be myself, be who I am, you know, without that judgment. And, you know, even when I was dating someone that was Christian, I didn't have to experience that judgment. And so, yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, and there's an extension of that, too. It's like, you know, for some people say, you know, you escaped religion for the control aspect. But like you said earlier, you have the ability to kind of control, you know, how much control are you giving away? How much permission
exactly,
are you asking for?
Exactly. It's letting me make decisions about how I want my relationships to be and letting that be more fluid than just, okay, these are the, you know, this is the box and it has to be in this box and letting me make those choices and be myself.
Choose your roles within like a set amount of time kind of thing rather than be forced into a role and have that be permanent.
Yeah.
So choose your class.
Yeah, right.
Baldur's Gate.
I chose a monk. And then I also played a fighter. Okay, sorry.
That could definitely have some religious trauma in there as well.
Oh, Shadowheart, please.
Sorry,
they're talking about a video game related to D&D. Just to clarify, for both listeners and
Listeners know what's up with the what's up. If you're listening to the Kink Podcast, you're probably a D&D player.
We're all nerds,
and you're probably a game console owner as well. So and you know what I'm talking
about. You're probably a paladin with religious trauma.
Sorry about
that. And I think, you know, there's that, like you said, Mango, that there is you know, we don't certainly don't want to say that everyone who comes to kink has trauma, but I do think that like it is a way to sort of find yourself and explore.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I came to kink for my own different set of trauma to navigate and work through. Because again, I think it really boils down to this idea, like as I've been listening to you, is like agency. Everything you're saying is like you grew up with no like sense of a real like self in this community. And then through all the different steps, whether they were easy, challenging, whether you took them alone or with other people, every single time was like a little bit more of that self. So you feels like you've been able to build yourself into who you've always wanted it to be, as opposed to like, you know, again, everybody's just being like, all right, we're going to mold you this way. We're going to paint you this way. So that's a really like amazing, you know, story to hear about.
And if you're not
agency.
This way, you're punished.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. That's the opposite of it.
Yeah. Usually with, you know, hell. That's usually the answer too. You know, death. I mean, you might get punished on earth, but that's the one you're really trying. Because
this is just a small blip in the eternity. And, you know, who wants to spend an eternity in a lake of fire with demons?
I mean, it's going to be lit.
Yeah. Literally.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I have some more questions, but before I ask mine, I'm wondering if the gentlemen in the room want to finish up with any of their questions. We have about 8 minutes left.
I was gonna throw in the extra one that I think I marked out was like the challenges and pitfalls of kind of exploring traumas. I think we touched on it earlier, but just kind of ask it more explicitly, like, you know, coming from a religious background and then going into exploring that in kink, what are some like pitfalls that people might want to be aware of? Like you say, you don't want to re-traumatize yourself and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But are there any additionals?
Yeah, I mean, I think jumping in, like at first, I definitely had a lot of like triggering feelings, just feeling shame and stuff over the things I was doing. And, you know, easing in a little bit slower, I think, is a better idea.
Good life lesson.
Like cannonball in when you came in?
Slightly, yeah, a little, you know.
I can imagine that's like easy to do though, because you're like, I really just want something different from what I've had.
Yeah, it was like, you know.
Pendulum swing.
Or the frenzy that people talk about with kink.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like, you want to do everything at the same
ripping
time.
Ripping off that long denim dress and being like, all right.
Oh, God, long denim dress. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and, you know, yeah. So, I mean, I think that it's a little better to go a little bit slower with things for sure, because you can face a lot of things that you don't expect to necessarily hit you as hard as they do. And just, yeah, being gentle with yourself. You don't have to do everything in a day. You don't and can't deconstruct in a day, and you can't get, you know, overcome trauma in a day. And
maybe you can't.
Like,
I can, though.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Kenny. Fake Dom Kenny back.
So the way Mango does it is she just puts stuff in her butt.
Yeah, literally it. And then I'm in bliss.
I work through all my trauma by putting it in my butt. For our listeners, I'm joking.
It's the running joke that will never die.
That and I.
Denzel, any final questions or thoughts?
What's one of the coolest things you've done in the kink scene?
Oh, I like
a great
question.
Yeah, no, it's been like 10 years, so it's very hard to just pick.
That is a tough question.
Thing. I've done so many awesome scenes.
What came to mind?
Yeah, what popped in your head?
I
and it can be for you. It ain't even got to be cool, like in terms. Like,
I loved, you know, one of my favorite things was experimenting with just heavier impact and like facial impact and
facial
punching.
Impact.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. What?
And my face punching journey was probably
face
one of
face punching.
My,
wait.
We talked about this.
I feel like
on
I've seen the pics.
I'd like to hear more.
Yeah. I don't know. I got it into my head that I wanted to experience being punched in the face, and it was. A journey, and it was, I don't know, it was really
you talked really eloquently about this on your last episode.
Yeah. It was it was very empowering.
I loved what you was I loved everything you've ever said ever, but I loved what you said about it, so it was
literally blushing.
Yeah, that was a very empowering series. I don't know, kink has just been wonderful. I don't have
I mean, face punching's,
you know,
really fucking cool. I'm just saying,
that's
what's your answer. That's a great answer.
As a disclaimer for our listeners, if you're going to enter into a face punching journey, make sure you do so with lots of safety precautions
and information.
Yes, yes,
and information.
Yes. Please be risk aware.
Yes, be risk aware.
Yes.
And a very important understanding that if you have a bruise, you might need a few days to, like, you know, recover.
Yes. Yeah. Dermablend. Really, can buy that before.
it's
really great. Like, but be
sponsored by Dermablend.
we're not actually sponsored, but
the sticks that cover tattoos, those are the ones you gotta get.
Okay.
Any other fun kink adventures before I start to close this out?
Wait. You guys did an adventure with you guys went out to like someplace in the mountains. Is that like on the list?
Oh, you mean the femme party?
Yeah.
Our femme parties.
I mean, I think that's a highlight. Do you think that's a highlight?
Yes. No.
The pictures look like it's a highlight.
The pictures look pretty highlight. Yeah.
The femme community that I have become involved in has been honestly the most healing group of the entire kink community. They're wonderful people, and I love them, and I think that everyone should have access to safe spaces like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just echo that and agree and say that I'm not someone who experienced religious trauma, but coming into a space where I could be myself with other femmes and experience the full, like breadth of my humanity and my sexuality around feminine people or people who identify as femme. It's like one of the more important things I've done, mm-hmm. both in life and in kink. And I'm not, that's not a joke. That's mm-hmm. so real for me. It's
community.
And like, I'd like to make a special shout out to the people who organize those events because it is a labor of love for them. Yeah. This is not like their job. Mm-hmm. They organize it for this small group of us. And they know who they are.
You know who you are.
You know who you are.
And if you don't, it's like, not you.
Yeah, and if it's not you, go away.
This message does not apply.
Just kidding. Stay here.
No,
stay
make
here.
Your own safe spaces. Yeah. Make your
yes. Well,
go to the beach instead.
Yeah.
and then sensational. Like just kind of on that note, like finding your own community, building your own community. Like that's all mm-hmm. like things that helped you build or push through mm-hmm. the exploration of, I guess, the religious trauma. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Finding like-minded people who will love and support you in your journey to finding yourself is very, very important for everyone. You know, not just women, not just femmes, everyone. Mm-hmm.
Damn, we should just close out on that.
I was just going to say, we should. My last question was going to be, like, what advice do you have for people exiting out of religious trauma and into kink? But that was it.
Yeah,
that is the advice.
That's the advice, yeah.
Well, before we close out, are there places our listeners can find you?
If you want to be found.
If you want to be found.
Yeah, I'm on FetLife. My name is Sensational. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the only kink social media I have going on, and I'm not super active, but but I'm there. You can send me a message, but expect a long delay.
Perfect. And for our listeners, Sensational spelled with S-I-N, we were mentioning before.
Which I am now aware. This year, now aware.
Yeah, Orange didn't know.
I love that.
Thought it was like the future Sensational.
No, he thought it was just like Orange Sensational.
That was like how the actual word Sensational.
Oh,
I know.
That was so funny.
And you got all these books in front of us.
Denzel, what were you going to say?
I don't remember what I was going to say.
Well, on that note.
No, I don't think I remember.
Let us know if you remember. We'll do a follow-up episode.
Wait. I think Denzel was going to say 30
minutes. I think I was going to say 90 minutes.
No. not this time, y'all.
Okay.
You can find us at Taking in the Scene on FetLife at Taking in the Scene. We are also on Gmail at takinginthescenepodcast@gmail.com.
Yes.
And on Instagram at Taking in the Scene Podcast. Message us if you have thoughts and feelings about anything, but especially about this episode. We'd love to hear them. If there's something we didn't talk about, I personally would love to have Sensational come back and talk about anything. Yes. So I'm now forcing her to come back for season 4.
Next episode, Sensational.
We'll make a topic just for
you.
Yeah,
we'll make it.
All right. I'm happy to talk to you guys.
Face punching. Talk all about it.
A whole hour.
I will. I could talk about it.
I mean, maybe we should do an episode on like harder impact or like more intense impact. Season 4. We'll do that in season 4.
Season 4.
On that note, Denzel, would you like to take us out?
Sometimes an egg falls from a tree, and sometimes the book gets closed.